Hello and welcome to Hello Tangent, the podcast where we talk about video game movies, TV, comics, and desperately try to stay on topic. I am your host, Clark, a.k.a. the Reverend Michael Snakebite, and it's just me and the mascots here today. We, obviously, if you're listening to this as it comes out, there's a lot going on in the world right now, and we don't want to ignore what is going on. I should say mainly in the country that I am in, which is the United States. A lot is going on right now. But the world is dealing with its own problems as well. COVID among many of them. But basically, I have two points of order to kind of go about before we get into today's topic. One of the reasons that I am recording by myself today is because I actually lost about 4 episodes worth of material, which Kat was on a couple of those. And this is actually a completely new topic I'm going to be doing today, but I lost also 2 of my solo episodes that were 2 of my quarantine top 10 countdowns, and I think I'm going to stop calling them that now because it seems like other news stories have taken precedence over COVID-19. So they're no longer quarantines, I guess. They're just top 10s to kind of get us through some of these hard times. And like I said, I don't want to ignore what's going on in the world today, but this is a podcast that, you know, I pretty much created so that I didn't have to talk about history and politics, because I have to do that so much in my day job. And the events that are going on in the country right now very much are affecting both myself and Kat at our places of business. So I've been extremely busy and extremely stressed. I'm recording at a weird time right now. I'm not caffeinated, so I feel a little bit sluggish doing this, kind of lost at the moment. But we're going to forge ahead and make it happen, because I've got to get something done, because, like I said, I lost a lot of hours worth of content that hopefully I will stumble across and find. I don't think they're permanently lost. I hope not, at least. I think that I will come across them at some point, and then everything will be okay. But until then, I'm going to record this episode, which should be the week of June. I don't even know what day it is. It's like June 9th when I'm recording this. But basically, getting into it, stop wasting all this time. I'm going to keep this as a shorter episode, to the point, and have some fun. And it's all freestyle. There's no research, not a lot of research really done in this. It's another one of my personal top 10s. So it wasn't hard for me to pick these and kind of arrange them in order. And the more I think about it, the more I could probably flip some of them around or drop some of them, but I kind of made myself some rules to abide by, and I'll go through it. But today's topic, if you haven't already read when you clicked on this episode, is going to be my top 10 favorite movie scores. So now, let's not confuse this right out the gate with movie soundtracks. So soundtracks can be licensed music along with original music, but film scores are original music written for a movie, written for a film. So these are my top 10 favorite movie scores. I try to keep it one composer per entry for the list, but that's just so almost impossible. There's a couple of these composers I'm almost surprised only made it once on here. I could have done an entire list of Hans Zimmer scores, honestly, but I narrowed it down to one that I picked actually for this, believe it or not, and it's not one that you would think of, and that's why this list is going to be kind of fun. But let's not waste too much time. Let's get into it. Here we go with the Reverend Michael Snakebite's favorite movie film scores. I guess that's redundant, movie film scores. Whatever. Here we go. Coming in at number 10 is going to be Gone with the Wind. The composer for this film was Max Steiner, who also did Casablanca, which very easily could have made this list as well, as that's a fantastic score. I chose Gone with the Wind, though, instead as my number 10, and I wasn't sure if I even wanted to put this one on my list, because, like I said, there were so many other movies by, Hans Zimmer, or scores by, Hans Zimmer, and, even, John Williams. I could have done an entire list of John Williams movies, but I wanted something to kind of really show the diversity, too, and this score does mean a lot to me. It's great, it's sweeping, it's epic, it just fits the movie so well. And say what you want about the movie holding up today because of some of maybe the the racial themes in it. It is set during the Civil War, so there are some themes that are uncomfortable to talk about in 2020. It's a period piece, and we can't ignore that was what life was like then. I will say one of the reasons I like this movie and score in particular is so I grew up in the South, the American South, obviously, and Georgia particularly, and it's obviously Gone with the Wind is set in Atlanta during the Civil War as the Union is starting to invade Georgia, and you see Atlanta burning, and it's a famous scene, and it looks great still. It's just a really harrowing, powerful movie. And it goes beyond war. It's not really a war movie. When I was little, I wanted to watch it because it was a war movie, because my dad got me into military history early, and that's what I obviously went to college to major in. But I wanted to see it for it's a war movie. I want to see that. And it's really not. It's so much more. It's a drama, romance and on again, off against romance. It's a pretty realistic to life drama. Involves, family tragedy. And just some real life relationships, and it was things that even today it's like, wow, that's more realistic. It's not really Hollywooded up as far as that's not how the world works. It's actually people falling in and out of love and dealing with family, dealing with death of I don't want to spoiler, but death of family members and things like that, and things that bring together and separate a family, and then really just the spirit and forging ahead of people in this time when so much turmoil was going on in the world. It really deals with Scarlett O'Hara being a single, I guess you can call her a single woman, but a woman whose husband is not around, off at war, and then dealing with, the idea of cheating on him, and then also just surviving as a woman whose world is kind of burning around her, quite literally, when Atlanta burns. And then you get some of that kind of post-war feeling of how to rebuild your life. It's that movie has a lot more to offer than just kind of fun one-liners and, some fun memes and stuff. Cause there are great memes that come out of that, that movie, mostly the look that Scarlett O'Hara, Vivian Leigh gives. It's used in a lot of memes. And then obviously the famous quote of "Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn" is kind of become pop culture lexicon now at this point. But anyway, that's Gone with the Wind at number 10. I encourage you to check it out. Like I said, I kind of grew up with the movie. I need to watch it. I haven't watched it in probably 15 or 20 years almost now. I haven't watched it since I was probably in high school. So yeah, I mean, at least 15 years or so. Not to be like, hey, here's how old I'm getting. But yeah, I'm getting old. But let's move on now. Number 9, and this is probably the biggest shocker for a lot of people, because of all the movies I could have picked by this composer, I picked a very out of the blue one, but I'm starting to see a theme with some of the music that I like. Not that I don't already know what I like, but Sherlock Holmes, it comes in at number 9, and that is the recent Sherlock Holmes movies starring Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr. And of course, this composer was Hans Zimmer, who I could have picked Inception, I could have picked The Dark Knight. I could have picked, I believe he didn't do all the Lord of the Rings movies, but I want to say he helped out on some of those. He's helped out on a lot of movies that people don't realize that he might not be credited on, but one of the most influential living composers. I would say if John Williams wasn't still alive, that Hans Zimmer might be the greatest living movie composer, but I think I got to give it to John Williams as long as he's still kicking. Back to Sherlock Holmes, though. I love the movie. The second movie is not great. The first movie is a really enjoyable kind of fun romp. It's clever. I like the dialogue. I love the getting inside the inner monologue of Sherlock, and all those things. But really the score does a lot to carry the action in this movie. And, from the underground, brawling for money, the underground fight club thing that Sherlock Holmes goes to blow off steam after he makes an ass of himself. That whole scene, I just love that, how that music really carries that whole fight. But also a lot of the action scenes, the chase scenes when they're, when they're fighting the big guy in the on the dockyards and everything, just the music everywhere is so much fun. And then anytime, even all the way to the credits when it does the freeze frame kind of sepia tone picture thing and go into the credits, I love just the whole main theme of that song is great. I love the instrumentation. They use banjos and old, not what you call player pianos, but it was some kind of broken stand-up piano thing that they used, and it made it give it that real twangy sound and everything. But it's just so it's so period fitting, and it gives you that kind of sense of kind of seedy London kind of dealings. It's just a great soundtrack that really fits the movie well. I think it's brilliant. Moving on at number 8 is going to be Braveheart. Braveheart, of course, original score was composed by James Horner. It's once again, maybe it's the Scottish in me, but this just is a beautiful soundtrack that it just puts you in the setting. I mean, you feel like you're there in Scotland during the battles. The themes playing during the battle scenes really make you feel the tension there. James Horner just did a really good job, and I'm trying to remember I just blanked out on who directed Braveheart. I totally forgot, but I want to say that James Horner's been used a couple of times by him. I know he's James Cameron's go-to guy, but I can't remember who directed Braveheart now. Completely blanked out. Oh, well, doesn't matter. What I feel about this movie, as a historian, it's not historically accurate. I won't say not historically accurate at all. It has some historical accuracy. Some of the names are right. But, I mean, largely, this movie's not very historically accurate, but it's very poetic. I compare it to like 300, where, you know, I say, well, that movie's not, you know, it's not historically accurate to the battle, but it conveys the emotion, the feeling, it conveys the power, the message it's trying to get across of like what, you know, what this person did and how they became such a beloved figure in, you know, in their country's history. And that's kind of the story of William Wallace is told very poetically, is the best way to say it. And I believe that the writer, whose name is also Wallace, I think it's Harry Wallace or something Wallace, who wrote the book that Braveheart, the movie, is based on. I remember him saying that he technically based his story, the fictional story Braveheart, on a poem about William Wallace by a poet named Blind Harry. And so technically he's writing a fictional account of a poetic account of a real figure. So if you play telephone game there, that's why this movie doesn't really necessarily have a whole lot of historical accuracy, is because it's meant to be a romanticized version of this guy's life. So I can let it slide. I'm getting too far away from music though. And once again, the music, I mean, just put on the OST for this thing and just listen to it and just be chilled out. I mean, it immediately takes you to Scotland. Just immediately you see yourself in the hills and the highlands just running around. Granted, at this time period, they wouldn't have been wearing kilts, one of the other historical inaccuracies, but you'll see all that. I mean, you'll immediately get all those visions in your mind when you hear this music. It just lives and breathes Scotland. And it's just really powerful, and it has its moments of sadness and kind of melancholy, and obviously it has its moments of action and aggression, and that's what you want out of a good film score, I think. Moving on, number 7 is going to be Terminator 2 Judgment Day. The composer on this was Brad Fidel. I don't have a whole lot to say about this movie other than the fact that that opening track just gets me pumped. That is one of the most powerful main title openings, I think, in movie history. They're obviously... some of the other movies I have here ahead of it are going to also have some very powerful main title themes, obviously, or they wouldn't be on this list. But T2, it just breathes action movie. The whole soundtrack, or film score, I should say, hits the right notes as the action is happening. You know, the chase scene down the LA River, on the motorcycle, obviously, with the big rig chasing him on that. The big rig, I sound so dumb. I mean, the truck, essentially, chasing him. So many famous scenes. The Terminator going down into the molten lava. You think of the score, and I can just see all the scenes that are happening, and it's still a great movie, and a phenomenal soundtrack to go along with it, and like I said, one of the most powerful opening titles in movie history. If that song doesn't get you pumped up, I mean, I don't know what will. Like, that's a song that gets your adrenaline going. All right, moving on. Number 6 is Blade Runner. Blade Runner was composed by Vangelis, who is a very enigmatic, I won't say just composer, but like, I guess I don't even know how to describe Vangelis. Anyway, the film score composed by him, but Blade Runner, anyone who knows me, actually, I won't say anyone who knows me knows this, because I think I don't talk about it that much, but I love, freaking love cyberpunk. Like, cyberpunk aesthetic is the coolest thing in the world to me. Like, that's my thing. I don't necessarily look it, but I freaking love that aesthetic. I cannot wait for Cyberpunk 2077 to come out and hear some more cyberpunk soundtrack. But a lot of the music I listen to be inspired when I am working on projects is usually synthwave or retrowave or cyberpunk, dark synthwave, things like that. That's the stuff I actually listen to when I'm working on artistic projects. And a lot of people might be surprised by that because, you know, normally I listen to a lot of, you know, hard rock and metal, and that's kind of how I've always been, but generally pretty eclectic. You know, I grew up playing piano, so I am used to a lot of classical music, and I obviously love orchestration and symphonies. I also like just hard aggression, you know, heavy metal, and a lot of stuff in between, a lot of pop music I can get behind it. You know, I, being a musician and having, you know, done it semi-professionally, I'll say, because I did do it on an indie record label, and traveled around and toured as a musician and was kind of part of that whole industry for a while. Having done that, I don't know, I've found myself being more eclectic and really understanding and being able to, you know, when you are a musician, you kind of break apart music into its parts and you kind of can find appreciation in arrangement, which is, you know, putting together of a song. And I think that some people just hear something and they like it because they like the lyrics, or, you know, it makes them think it's a message about them or something, you know, then that's fine. You know, music is meant to draw out an emotion, and that's what it does. And a lot of pop music isn't meant to, you know, get a dance beat or have a fun term that's going to be the next, you know, buzzword kind of thing that people say. And, you know, that's what music's meant to do. But if, like I said, people who are actual musicians can really break down and hear the different parts of a song and kind of put it together and really kind of appreciate it in a different way that a lot of people don't necessarily understand. I try to explain to my wife all the time certain things like that, and she just shrugs her shoulders and says, I'm not going to get it. And I just have to kind of swallow it and be like, oh, well, you know, I tried. But yeah, wow, got way off Blade Runner there. Blade Runner the movie, I haven't watched it in about 5 or 6 years. I really want to watch it again because I want to watch it kind of leading up to like Cyberpunk 2077. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's sci-fi greatness. I want to say that movie really fell through the cracks with a lot of like nerds of my generation, because I was born not too long before it came out, so I was super young. There's no way I would have been able to see it when it first came out. Obviously not in theaters. I would have been like 4 years old or 3 years old or something. When I finally did watch it later on, I was like, wow, how did I miss this, you know, 80s movie in the middle of, I guess, a mountain of good 80s movies? It just kind of fell through the cracks. So I didn't see Blade Runner until I was like in, I want to say, my late teens or early 20s. But anyway, love it immediately because, like I said, just the whole aesthetic, cyberpunk is just my jam. Like I said, that's the kind of music that I kind of get behind too, and it really gets me motivated to do stuff. It's kind of my chill music. So that's a new secret about me, in case you didn't know that. Moving on, number 5 is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Composer for this film was Ennio Morricone, obviously Italian composer, because this was a spaghetti western. It was directed and filmed, an entire Italian film crew, writers, everything, the whole deal. That's why they call them spaghetti westerns, in case you didn't know that. And it's crazy because this kind of set the bar for what we think of when we think of western soundtracks. I mean, this is it. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is like what you think of when you think of the West. You know, you think immediately of that opening title and the wah, wah, wah. You know, I'm not gonna sit here and whistle it into the microphone because that would be annoying. But you know, everyone knows. Like right then, I just did that part, and everyone knows. Like wah, wah, wah. Like you know the song as soon as you hear it. It's been used in parodies. It's been used for commercials. It's just, you know, quintessential Western theme, and not to mention The Ecstasy of Gold, which is one of the greatest, like, I guess, just like riding off into the sunset kind of songs ever, or riding towards the treasure kind of songs. Metallica actually uses that as like their entrance theme. They come out on stage to The Ecstasy of Gold. If you don't know what I'm talking about, but you're a Metallica fan, now you know what I'm talking about. It's that song. Either way, the movie Once again, this is a movie my dad showed for me. I remember being over the holidays. I'd watched it like on a Thanksgiving weekend when they were doing movie marathons, and my dad was like, oh, you need to watch this movie. Now, granted, it is a long movie, and I did not have a good enough attention span at the time. And so I kind of had to watch it in chunks when I was little. And now that I'm older, I can pretty much, if I could find the time, I could sit through and watch it all. But it's a great movie, a great tale of three opposed forces, literally the good, the bad, and the ugly. And they're all after the same treasure. And at times they have to work together, and at times they have to betray each other. And it's a great tale of like backstabbing and just a race to the treasure. Just a quintessential Western. It's probably my favorite Western. I'd say after Tombstone, maybe. Tombstone is probably my favorite Western. But The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is very close second. Moving on. Number four is going to be Batman. And Batman that I'm referring to is the 1989 Batman starring Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson. The composer for this was Danny Elfman. Now, Danny Elfman, another one, I could have picked so many movies by him. Pretty much he's Tim Burton's go-to guy. If you've seen a Tim Burton movie, Danny Elfman almost assuredly has done the film score for it. And there's so many I could have picked. But I know I could not pick Batman. Granted, you know, total props to Hans Zimmer for The Dark Knight. Like I said, he did amazing with that movie, well, that trilogy. But I have to go with Danny Elfman's 1989 Batman. It really just gives me the feeling of being like behind the cowl and, you know, ready to leap off a rooftop onto people and kick ass. So it just makes you feel like Batman. It's such a driving soundtrack. And like I said, if you haven't heard it, by all means, check it out. If you haven't seen that movie, check it out. I think a lot of the younger generations maybe have never seen the older Batman, or they've seen the ones from the mid-90s, or they've seen, obviously, the Dark Knight trilogy. But you got to give, like I said, you got to give the original Batman some serious credit. It kind of made Batman serious and dark. And well, you know, the comics, I'd say the Dark Horse comics, Batman started that. But that was the first, I guess, dark take on Batman, really, that I know of, was the 1989 Tim Burton Batman. And the aesthetic on that movie is so Tim Burton. It looks great. It's gothic. It's dark. And it's, you know, it's got some seriously like scary scenes in it, like legitimate horror kind of stuff in it with you know, some of the things the Joker does and, you know, some gruesome killings and things. It wasn't afraid to be violent. And it was kind of unique for the time. You know, I think people consider Batman to be kind of goofy, silly, fun kid stuff. And while it is still kind of not, I won't say it's not cheesy by any means, but it's still got that comic feel to it. It's still really serious, and I think it's more of just Tim Burton's kind of dark humor that makes it, you know, kind of like that more than it actually is the material, because it is a very dark, serious movie. And also Jack Nicholson, just hilarious performance as the Joker. Great take on it. Maybe not the best Joker. I still like Heath Ledger's Joker, and I still obviously will always like Mark Hamill's voice for Joker and all of his animated and CG iterations, but still a great Batman movie that shouldn't be missed out. Number three, the only composer to make it on my list twice, and it's a shocker because it when I first came up with the idea for this countdown, this is not who I thought would be on here more than once. The only composer to appear more than once on this list is going to be James Horner. Number three is Titanic. I had mentioned earlier that James Horner is James Cameron's go-to guy, and here he knocked it out of the park. Titanic gets a lot of undeserved hate. It's still a fantastic movie. Fun fact about me, I loved the Titanic way before the movie even came out. I was obsessed with Titanic history. I had so many books on it, National Geographic, maps, models. I was obsessed with the Titanic when I was younger. It was part of the history kid in me. Murdoch is biting my notebook. Hey, buddy. But so when the movie came out, I was actually super excited. Granted, it's a love story, and you know, I was like a 13-year-old kid when it came out, and it probably wasn't, you know, not the coolest thing to, you know, it's like, oh, you're going to see that girl movie or something. But that movie has a lot more to offer. It is an incredibly well-made movie, and the set design is absolutely second to none. James Cameron may be a little psycho. It probably makes him a better director. But he's actually been to the Titanic like a bunch of times. Like, this guy legit loves going to the bottom of the ocean. He's gone to Challenger Deep in the Mariana Trench. He's he's nuts about the ocean. And I can respect that because I love the ocean too. And that's one of the reasons I was obsessed with the Titanic. But once again, you have all these, like, as opposed to the Scottish kind of themes you had from Braveheart with James Horner, in Titanic, you kind of get the Irish theme because so much of, like, the third class and even second class and even the crew were actually of Irish descent, not to mention that the Titanic itself was built in Belfast. So did I say that right? I think it was laid down in, where was it laid down? Oh my gosh, I just blanked out on my Titanic history. I know it definitely set sail first from Belfast. I want to say it was actually laid down in Belfast. All right, I'm not going to, you know, screw up and say 100% on anything on that because I just kind of talked myself out of it. I might be wrong on that. But that's not important right now. We're going to keep going. But still, there's a lot of Irish, what do you want to say, influence on the soundtrack or the film score for this movie. And it just fits so perfect. And once again, this movie, it has excitement. It has melancholy and straight up tear-jerking sadness. And everything is brought out in the film score. And, you know, I'm not even talking about the Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On. That's, even though that song is kind of derived from the actual film score, they use the same kind of melody. But, you know, I don't even need to comment on that song. Yeah, it was huge and popular at the time, but I don't consider it part of the original film score since that's like kind of the pop music seller for it. It was the music video song. But strictly just the original soundtrack is amazing. And, pop it in, check it out sometime, pop it in like you have a cassette or, you know, CD or something. No, you know, go to Spotify, check it out, something. They've got to have it on there somewhere. But I'm sure you can find all of that. But that, once again, just an amazing soundtrack, and it's really underrated. And I think it's underrated because the movie gets so much undeserved hate. It's become kind of a joke now at this point, and it's really undeserved. It's still one of the top 10 greatest movies of all time, easily. So don't make fun of Titanic. Coming in at number two, this is probably another dark horse that a lot of people wouldn't have seen. I think there are a lot, there are probably more technically better film scores, and there are probably more famous film scores than what I put at my number two. But I love this soundtrack so much that I had to put it on this list, and I love it so much that I had to put it ahead of some of these other great film scores. Number two is going to be Pirates of the Caribbean. Now, as these movies went on, they got worse, of course. I think the first three as a contained trilogy are okay from start to finish. They're fine. The last two are both kind of a mess, and they were just cash grabs. I didn't really care for either one of them. They kind of bored me. But I know, I don't think At World's End really is as bad a movie as some people, you know, think it is. And I think it's the culmination as far as from a soundtrack standpoint. Black Curse of the Black Pearl or At World's End would be my standalone movie to pick for, you know, which one you should listen to. But just as a blanket, I'll say Pirates of the Caribbean, the first three. Their soundtracks are just absolutely amazing. The composer on this was Klaus Badelt. He is a colleague of Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer actually started the soundtrack for Pirates of the Caribbean and kind of had started laying down some of the like some of the tracks and working on what the, like some of the songs are going to be. And then he was, I believe he was doing The Hobbit at the time, or Lord of the Rings. I guess this would have been early 2000s, so it must have been Lord of the Rings. Anyway, he was, actually I want to say it was some completely other movie. Once again, I'm mixing up my history here. But Hans Zimmer basically was engaged. He had a contract to do something else, and he had no time to work on Pirates of the Caribbean, so he gave it over to his colleague, Klaus Badelt. And I think that's how he says his name, Badelt, Klaus Badelt. He finished up the film score for Hans Zimmer. And he did a fantastic job. Pirates of the Caribbean is, it's, I love the golden age of piracy. Once again, as a history kid, I love that time period. I love that whole aesthetic. I love the pirate gimmick thing. That's, you know, it would have been a nasty, dirty, unhealthy time to be alive. But at the same time, there's like the romantic way we've built up the idea of the golden age of piracy. I love, and I just love the thought of, you know, being on the open ocean, and I love the sea, and I love, you know, the age of sail and the age of exploration, and I think it's fascinating. And so all this music just hits home for me. It makes me, you know, want to live that life as soon as I hear it. It's got its rousing moments. It's got its weird, creepy, supernatural moments, which is all of what Pirates of the Caribbean encompasses. So soundtrack fits perfect. I keep calling it soundtrack. The film score fits perfect. But yeah, that's all I'm going to say about it. As far as the movies, like I said, I like them. I think they're a fun time. I can always watch them. If they're on, I can have them on my TV while I'm doing other stuff. You know, it's a good time. And finally, at number one, and I cannot believe I've actually kept this under an hour. Last time I think I have tried to do one of these top tens, I keep rambling for anywhere up to an hour, hour and a half, which is like a full-length episode. But I really wanted to keep this one short. Number one is going to be, and it shouldn't be a surprise at all, it's going to be Star Wars, composed by John Williams, the immortal John Williams. I say that, I don't want to jinx him, but John Williams, still kicking. I want to give a total shout out to Back to the Future, which was Robert Zemeckis got directed that one, got John Williams to do the score for that, and also Indiana Jones, obviously. I just, both of those movies, I don't think have strong enough complete scores to... Raiders of the Lost Ark, you could argue I could have put on this list somewhere, and maybe should have, but it's, you know, too late now. Whatever, I'm sticking with it. But Star Wars, hands down, I don't know any other music that when it comes on doesn't immediately put a smile on my face. I mean, when you hear the opening theme to Star Wars, I'm in. Whatever's going on in the room, I just stop looking at it and my head snaps over to the TV or whatever's making that sound, because I hear that opening title and I'm just like, yes, buckle up, motherfuckers, Star Wars is coming on. And, you know, if I had to pick one movie, I don't know which one, it'd be too hard. I would want The Phantom Menace, because I would want Duel of the Fates, but I would also want Empire Strikes Back, because I get Imperial March. I couldn't even pick one. So I'm just saying Star Wars as a blanket. John Williams, like I said, probably, I would say, the best living film composer. Hans Zimmer probably will be the next one in line to take that throne. But John Williams is just amazing. You can't short his work and what he's done for the film industry. He's probably the most well-known, I would think. Maybe Quincy Jones or... like I said, Hans Zimmer or Danny Elfman, maybe those would be ones that are as well known as John Williams. But I mean, John Williams, people who don't know a whole lot about film composers probably still know, if they know a little, they know who John Williams is. He's the guy who did Star Wars. I can't say any more about the movies. We're going to do an entire episode on Star Wars. It's going to be a super multi-parter where we go into everything Star Wars. And so I won't talk too much about that without Kat, but, Star Wars is, I mean, obviously one of my favorite franchises. We talk about it a lot in passing on our episodes. And I can't wait to do the big episode. Basically, though, that's it. I'm going to wrap it up. Thanks for listening. You can find us on social media. You can find me on Twitter at RevSnakeBite. You can find us at HelloTangent. You can find us on Patreon. It's patreon.com/HelloTangent. You can find us on Instagram, Hello Tangent. It's pretty much Hello Tangent everywhere. You can listen to us on Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you're listening to this right now. Please spread the word, tell your friends, subscribe, like, do all that good stuff. If you want to help us out, like I said, we have a Patreon. It'll all go right back to making the podcast better. We'll have more time to do big, in-depth research episodes. And yeah, we got a lot of ideas coming up. We got to replace some of the time that I have misplaced somewhere, and hope I find today so I have those episodes back. But this will be my filler episode for the time being. Hope you enjoyed it, and I hope it inspired you to maybe take a closer look at some of the like film scores from some of your favorite movies and who actually did it, and see how that music actually makes the action drive or makes a sad scene sadder, or, you know, makes a love scene more romantic. And you'll be really shocked when you start paying attention to the music in some of these movies. I could have gone on forever about some of these, but I just really wanted to keep it short, keep it sub 45 minutes, and I think I've done that pretty well. Other than that, thank you. Stay safe out there. Stay healthy out there. There's a lot of craziness going on. We all need to kind of come to a consensus and figure out everything that's going on out there. Like I said, I don't want this to be a political podcast. That's going to be for another venue. But I hope this was able to take your mind off it for a little bit, or just give you, you know, 30 minutes of entertainment real quick and give you a glimpse into a music guy who's also a nerd, a few of his favorite film scores from movies. We'll probably have a full episode where we go into more in-depth things about our favorite film scores of all time. Hopefully that'll be coming up soon. But for now, I'm signing off. Once again, I'm your host, Clark, the Rev. Michael Snakebite, and I hope you have a wonderful week. Goodbye.